watch me. Ooh, okay. Ooh, okay. Ooh, ooh, watch me. Watch me. Ooh, watch me. Watch me.
You do.
Watch me. Watch me.
You do.
Okay. Ooh, crazy.
Do the stanky leg.
Stank.
Do the stanky leg.
Stank, stank.
Do the stanky leg.
Stank.
Do the stanky leg.
Stank, stank.
Do the stanky leg.
Stank.
Do the stanky leg.
Stank, stank.
Do the stanky leg.
Stank.
Do the stanky leg.
Stank, stank.
Now break your legs.
Break 'em.
Break your legs.
Break the knot.
Tell 'em break your legs.
Break 'em.
Break your legs.
Break the knot
and break your legs.
Break 'em.
Break your legs.
Break the knot
and break your legs.
Break 'em.
Break your legs.
Break the knot.
Now I me bop,
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 bop, bop, bop, bop, bop, bop, bop, bop,
bop,
bop, bop, bop, bop, bop, bop,
bop, bop,
bop, bop, bop, bop, bop,
bop, bop,
bop. Now watch me whip,
hey.
Now watch me nay nay.
Okay.
Now watch me whip, whip. Watch me nay nay.
Why me do it?
Now watch me whip,
kill it.
Watch me nay nay.
Okay.
Now watch me whip, whip. Watch me nay nay.
Can you do it?
Now watch me.
Ooh, watch me. Watch me. Ooh, watch me. Watch me. Ooh, watch me. Watch me. Ooh.
Okay.
Ooh.
Okay.
Ooh, watch me. Watch me. Ooh, watch me. Watch me. Ooh, watch me. Watch me. Ooh.
Okay.
Ooh.
Now watch me. Now I'm me Superman.
Okay.
Now I'm me yo.
Soldier.
Now I'm me Superman.
Okay.
Now I'm me yo.
Soldier.
Now I'm me Superman.
Okay.
Now I'm me yo.
Soldier.
Now I'm me Superman.
Okay.
Now I'm me Duff. Duff.
Duff.
Duff.
Duff.
Duff.
Duff.
Duff.
Duff.
Duff.
Duff.
Duff.
Duff. Duff.
Duff. Hold on.
Duff.
Now I'm me Duff. Duff.
Duff.
Duff.
Duff.
Duff.
Duff.
Duff. Duff.
Duff.
Duff.
Duff.
Duff.
Duff.
Now I'm me Bop. Bop.
Duff.
Bop. Bop.
To the right.
Bop. Bop, bop,
to the left,
bop, bop,
to the right.
Now I me bop, bop,
to the left,
bop, bop,
to the right.
Bop, bop,
to the left,
bop, bop,
to the right.
Now watch me whip,
hey.
Now watch me nay nay.
Okay.
Now watch me whip,
whip.
Watch me nay nay.
Why me do it?
Now watch me whip,
kill it.
Watch me nay nay.
Okay.
Now watch me whip,
whip.
Watch me nay nay.
Can you do it?
Now watch me.
Ooh, watch me. Watch me. Ooh, watch me. Watch me. Ooh, watch me. Watch me.
Everything that don't make sense about me makes sense when I'm with you.
It is Monday, August the 31st, and this is VOA's International Edition. Many thanks for joining us. Coming up, the Europe migrant crisis and the question of returning refugees home.
It would be unconscionable for countries in Europe to send people back to almost certain death in many cases.
Also ahead, Nigerian authorities arresting Boko Haram extremists, plus rebuilding New Orleans' music scene after Hurricane Katrina. Hello everyone, I'm Steve Norman. Hungary says it has arrested a fifth suspect, a Bulgarian, on suspicion of human trafficking in connection with the deaths of 71 migrants whose bodies were found in a refrigeration truck left behind on a highway. Three other Bulgarians and an Afghan have already been arrested. As thousands of migrants continue to stream into Europe, the top security officials in Britain, France, and Germany called for better processing of them by the end of the year at points in Greece and Italy after their passage from war-torn countries in Africa and the Middle East. European Union ministers will be gathering on September the 14th in Luxembourg to deal with what's been described as Europe's worst humanitarian crisis since World War II. For some perspective on all of this, VOA's Victor Beatty speaks with the CEO of Refugee Council of Australia, Paul Power, about the seriousness of the crisis.
It's an incredibly serious problem. I mean, we've seen hundreds of people lose their lives, so many people who are on the move in situations where they can't get the assistance that they need and where people are having to resort to quite extreme ways of moving to actually get to a place of enduring safety. I mean, this problem, unfortunately, has been developing for years. It's obviously directly related to crises in countries such as Syria, the civil war that's been occurring there, and the lack of effective international action to address that, but also the lack of effective international support for the countries in the front line of refugee movements, you know, such as Turkey, Lebanon, Jordan, and the like. And what we're seeing is a greater movement of people out of those countries of first asylum towards places where they can get more enduring safety. It's really difficult to overestimate the serious nature of the current crisis. It's, we're seeing the number of displaced people at the highest level globally in 70 years, and certainly the front line of that displacement is happening, in the Middle East and into Europe and elsewhere.
Luxembourg is going to host this meeting. They say it's going to focus on sending migrants home and measures to prevent human trafficking. Obviously, the human trafficking highlighted by this horrific discovery of more than 70 bodies stuffed in a truck in Austria.
Well, sending migrants home is going to be quite a difficult challenge, given that the vast majority of people on the move into Europe at the moment are people who are fleeing their countries of origin because of a well-founded fear of persecution. I mean, the largest group of people on the move into Europe are people fleeing the Syrian civil war, and it would be unconscionable for countries in Europe to send people back to almost certain death in many cases into that civil war. Nor would it be appropriate for the countries of Europe to be sending people back to countries of first asylum. I mean, at the moment, Turkey is hosting 1.8 million Syrian refugees. Lebanon, which is a country of 4.4 million people, is hosting 1.2 million, a quarter of its population are now refugees from Syria. And it's a tiny country geographically as well. So I think this highlights the fact that, all of us around the world can see, the serious nature of the problem in Syria, and no one could reasonably question the need for people to flee the situation in Syria and to go to other countries. But it's just unimaginable that two or three countries in the Middle East should have to bear the full international responsibility for hosting the millions of people, more than 4 million people who've been displaced by this crisis. There needs to be a much more effective regional action, not only within Europe, but between the countries of Europe and the nations in the Middle East who are hosting the largest number of refugees from Syria. Unfortunately, what we're seeing, across Europe and the Middle East and also around the world, unfortunately, my own country, Australia, is one of the most appalling examples of this, of countries doing everything they possibly can to push responsibility away and expect that somebody else is going to take responsibility for groups of people that no one would deny need protection from persecution.
Well, Paul, if you had a chance to be at that September 14 meeting hosted by the European Union, what might you tell them would be the possible solutions to this crisis?
The difficulty is that there are no simple answers, and really for the time being, in an attempt to try to stabilise the situation as much as possible, we need to focus on how we can address the needs of people who've been forced out of Syria and other countries. And that has to come about through a much more equitable sharing of responsibility for people who've been displaced.
And as Paul Power, CEO of the Refugee Council of Australia, he was speaking with VOA's Victor Beattie. And we turn now to our social media segment, International Edition's G. Abby Lee joins us now to talk about what people are saying regarding this migrant crisis. Hey, G, who do we begin with?
Hi, Steve. I went onto the Twitter account of Pope Francis to see if he tweeted about the migrant's death, and he did. In his latest tweet, he wrote, "Lord, help us always be more generous and closer to poor families." That's been retweeted more than 6,000 times.
I see it. And how does that relate to migrant issues?
Great question. Pope Francis called the incident an offense against the entire human family. He's not only tweeting, "You should be more generous and closer to poor families in your own community," but also to those who come from poor countries, i.e. migrants. His official Twitter account is in English, at Pontifex, that's P-O-N-T-I-F-E-X. That account has nearly 7 million followers.
And gee, are there any other accounts out there tweeting about what's happening to the migrants?
The International Organization for Migration, or IOM, has been very active on Twitter recently. It's an intergovernmental organization, and on Twitter at IOM underscore news. Their pinned tweet, which means the one that always shows up on top, is this: death of all migrants and refugees attempting to reach Europe by sea in 2015 is now at 2,373. The Geneva-based agency is also promoting hashtag Migrant Lives Matter.
And just how popular is that hashtag?
Not too popular. Slightly more than 1,000 tweets mentioned the hashtag in the last 30 days. On the other hand, hashtag refugees was used in around 5,600 tweets in the last 24 hours, and hashtag migrants was used in nearly 3,000 tweets in the same time frame. Steve?
Many thanks, G. That's International Edition's G. Abby Lee, always there with the latest from Twitter. A reminder, you can follow us on Twitter if you'd like, International Edition. You can find us at VOA underscore IE. Still ahead on the program, a new death from Ebola in West Africa. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
This is VOA's International Edition. Also in the news, health officials in Sierra Leone on Sunday confirmed a new death from the Ebola virus less than a week after the last known Ebola patient was released from a hospital. West African country's medical officer said samples of the body of the 67-year-old woman who died recently in a rural area near the Guinea border have tested positive for the deadly disease. The discovery upsets the 42-day countdown, twice the incubation period, for the country to be declared Ebola-free. The Ebola epidemic has claimed more than 11,200 lives since it was first detected in early 2014. In Egypt, the government announced two-stage parliamentary elections in October and November, the first since former military chief, now president, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, overthrew Islamist President Mohamed Morsi 2 years ago. The country has been without a legislature since June of 2012, when a court dissolved the democratically elected main chamber. President Sisi has passed dozens of laws by decree. Meanwhile, the foreign ministry on Sunday summoned the British ambassador over his criticisms of the sentences handed down last week against three Al Jazeera journalists for reporting false news. Ambassador John Casson posted on his Facebook page that the three-year term prison terms could undermine confidence in Egypt's stability. Canadian Mohamed Fahmy, Australian Peter Grest, and Egyptian Bahar Mohamed were sentenced on Saturday. Grest was deported earlier this year. He spoke Sunday at his home in Australia.
It is now up to President Sisi to do what he said he would do from the outset, and that is pardon us if we were ever convicted. This is a wrong. Everyone knows it is wrong. And so we will be using every legal, political, diplomatic, and social means at our disposal.
Also in the news in Egypt, Italian energy group Eni said Sunday it had discovered the largest known gas field in the Mediterranean off the Egyptian coast, containing perhaps 30 trillion cubic feet of gas, potentially meeting the country's energy needs for decades. Nigeria's security agency said Sunday it had arrested prominent members of the Sunni insurgent group Boko Haram, suspected of directing deadly suicide attacks. The Department of State Services said the suspects were apprehended over the course of 2 months in Lagos, Kano, Plateau, Enugu, and Gombe states. Military spokesman Colonel Sani Kuka Sheka Usman told VOA security services are on track to defeat the militant group within the three-month timeline given by President Muhammadu Buhari.
We are making tremendous progress in various fronts of the war. And, hitherto there were some held territories by Boko Haram, for instance, Dikwa, Logomani and all the rest, they have now been recaptured and we are moving on towards Baga and, of course, Gambarungala. So, invariably, we are making effort to ensure that within that time frame, we are able to really defeat Boko Haram.
He said recent military operations have resulted in the capture of a major Boko Haram bomb-making factory in northeast Borno State. A regional 8,700-troop force aimed at ending the insurgency is due to deploy soon. Meantime, the DSS also said its agents interrupted plans by insurgents to attack the financial capital, Lagos. And rebels in South Sudan are already accusing government forces of violating the latest ceasefire, which went into effect at midnight on Saturday. The fighting said to be occurring in the oil-rich Unity State. The government was unable to verify the claim. Ceasefire was part of a peace agreement signed Wednesday in Juba by President Salva Kiir, who expressed some reservations about power sharing. Internationally mediated agreement was signed earlier by rebel leader Riek Machar in Ethiopia.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palkov.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Reestablishment of diplomatic relations between Cuba and the United States has opened the door to better access to the internet on the island there, and until now, they had almost no contact with the rest of the world through the internet. On a recent visit to Havana, VOA Celia Mendoza prepared this report, which is now narrated by Amy Katz.
After decades without access to the internet in Cuba, where only 5% of the population has full entry to the web.
It's a possibility that has been given to the people to connect to the world and communicate with their friends. I think this is a positive development.
Roberto Gonzalez and his wife Tanya Enriquez hope more people will connect now that Cuban authorities have approved the use of prepaid cards to access the web. The government-owned telecommunications company Itexa sells a limited number of cards daily. For about $2, Cubans can buy 30 minutes in cyberspace.
Not everybody knows how to do this. It's a little difficult for some people. For others, it's easy. It's complicated.
This online video call is taking place at Galeano Park, one of the 35 wireless points that have been set up across Cuba. And although the prepaid cards can be used in any cell phone, laptop, or tablet, there are restrictions. Tanya Enriquez can only call using the IMU app, the only one authorized for video calls.
It's time to open the doors and communicate. It's time to see how the two countries benefit. And I think that the two countries have opportunities to benefit.
The Cuban government says that because of the U.S. embargo, internet service is only provided by satellite. But many expect that the reestablishment of diplomatic relations with the U.S. will allow tech companies to start building a more robust infrastructure. Selling prepaid cards is the first step in this new process that might soon include more transmission towers, fiber optic cable, and iPhone sales. For reporter Celia Mendoza, Amy Katz, VOA News.
You know, you can stay on top of the news anytime, especially stories like the U.S.-Cuba relationship, at our website. Just check us out at voanews.com. This is VOA.
Here's science in a minute.
A team of volunteers sailing in a flotilla of some 30 vessels recently completed its month-long research expedition through the western portion of the infamous Great Pacific Ocean garbage patch. The expedition sailed between Hawaii and San Francisco through the massive collection of marine debris so that it could gather data to find out how much plastic is actually floating in the Pacific Ocean. The Ocean Cleanup Group plans to use the gathered data to create the first high-resolution map of plastic in the Pacific, as well as to help in the preparation for the organization's large-scale ocean cleanup project planned for 2020. A 2014 study found that currently there are at least 5.25 trillion pieces of plastic floating in the oceans, with about one-third of it concentrated in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Very good to have you with us today. You know, 10 years after Hurricane Katrina inundated the U.S. city of New Orleans, Louisiana, threatening to wash away its vibrant musical heritage along with its neighborhoods, the beat still goes on. Bronwyn Benito reports a musician's village is preserving the city's unique sound.
New Orleans is known for its music. But 10 years ago, the music was drowned out by howling winds and rising water. Musicians joined other residents fleeing the city. Part of the effort to bring New Orleans back to life focused on bringing back the musicians and creating a place where they could live and work and make music.
Losing that heritage would have taken away the beating heart of New Orleans and damaged it forever. We're such a unique and fragile environment that we needed to get our musicians back. And actually, the Musicians Village was one of the first places that musicians were able to put down roots and get back.
With help from 40,000 volunteers, the nonprofit organization Habitat for Humanity built 72 low-cost homes in one of the city's residential neighborhoods. The village includes a community center named after New Orleans jazz great Ellis Marsalis that features a performance hall and recording studio. More than 170 musicians, like classically trained avant-garde cellist Helen Gillet, have moved in. She joined the crew building the homes.
It started on a construction site. So I learned the empowering feeling of actually learning how to do construction when I thought I'd be hopeless at it. It was a great feeling, and then meeting other musicians in that context really brought us together.
Now she's recording CDs and collaborating with her neighbors as New Orleans celebrates the resurgence of its vibrant music culture. Bronwyn Benito, VOA News, Washington, D.C.
Some of the best music you'll ever enjoy in New Orleans. You should go sometime. Canadian-born singer Celine Dion is back. How about that? A comeback after years of hiatus. The once superstar back on the stage at Caesars Palace in Las Vegas. 47-year-old singer who has been scheduled to perform approximately 40 shows between now and January is singing some of her hits like Because You Love Me and My Heart Goes On. you might remember that song from the movie Titanic, huh? Great love scene. Anyway, moving on. Reportedly, Dionne took a break from her singing project to take care of her ailing husband, Rene Angéil. He has been recovering from cancer. Indeedy. Many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. Always good to have you with us. Hope you'll stay tuned. The top world news is straight ahead. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Chaz Hall, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Monday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On August 25th, a Russian military court found Ukrainian filmmaker Oleg Sentsov and Ukrainian activist Oleksandr Kolchenko guilty of politically motivated fabricated charges and sentenced Mr. Sentsov to 20 years and Kolchenko to 10 years in prison. The charges against Mr. Sentsov and Mr. Kolchenko are baseless and violate their human rights. The case against them rested on testimony obtained through torture, which in at least one case was retracted because it had been coerced. Indeed, Russia singled out Sentsov and Kolchenko for exercising their freedom of speech within a sovereign Ukraine, where they expressed their vocal opposition to Russia's purported annexation of Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula. On May 11, 2014, Russia's Federal Security Service arrested Oleg Sentsov at his home in Simferopol, Crimea, territory the international community recognizes as part of Ukraine and where Russia has no legal jurisdiction. A Ukrainian filmmaker whose work had garnered international attention, Sentsov had just taken part in a rally to support the Euromaidan protests in Kiev and to oppose Russia's occupation of Crimea. Similarly, Russian occupational authorities arrested Oleksandr Kolchenko, a pro-Ukrainian activist, 5 days later. Both were illegally transported to Russia, forcibly assigned Russian citizenship to deprive them of their rights as foreign citizens, and held in detention without trial for over a year. The United States strongly condemns the trial and sentencing of film director Oleg Sentsov and activist Oleksandr Kolchenko as groundless, a violation of human rights, and a contravention of international law. This is clear miscarriage of justice, said State Department spokesman John Kirby. Both Ukrainians were taken hostage on Ukrainian territory, transported to and imprisoned in Russia, and had Russian citizenship imposed on them against their wills. They have reported abuses by Russian authorities, who also restricted their access to lawyers, family, and others while in jail for more than a year. Mr. Sentsov and Mr. Kolchenko were targeted by authorities because of their opposition to Russia's attempted annexation of Crimea, said spokesperson Kirby. The United States stands by those who are persecuted for exercising their rights to speak freely and engage in peaceful protest. We again call upon the Russian Federation to implement the commitments it made in signing the Minsk agreements by immediately releasing Oleg Sentsov, Oleksandr Kolchenko, Nadia Savchenko, and all other remaining hostages.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.